Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me today for SMIE Consulting's Midweek Roundup. My name is Marty Bennett. I'm the president of SMIE Consulting. And today's Midweek Roundup live chat here on Facebook, on our SMIE Consulting Facebook page. We'll cover three topics today, topics which have appeared in the news in the last few days related to international education and social media issues. Two of these are going to be ones that for close followers of the test optional movement and also IDP and their student buyer behavior project, their student survey that they've had for the last couple of years. We'll be sharing some of those results. And we're also going to cover the unfortunate demise of Google Plus. And I'll cover that more and a little bit tongue-in-cheek there, as you can imagine, for those of you who know me well. Not sad to see Google Plus die a very long overdue death. But certainly we're seeing in terms of the social media landscape, there's always change going on for international educators on what the new hot platform is, and certainly Google Plus never really qualified as a hot platform. But we'll talk more about that in a little bit. So again, thank you all for joining me for this Facebook Live chat on the SMIE Consulting Facebook page. We're going to spend about half an hour today covering the topics related to test optional policies at different institutions. We're going to look at some new IDP student survey data that has just come out and released last week at the AIEC conference in Australia. And we'll cover the demise of Google Plus. So thanks again for joining me. This week I'm really excited to talk about this first topic, the test optional movement that's been going on, particularly over the last 10-15 years. But it's kind of gathered some steam in the last few weeks, few months, as it relates to policies that institutions have as to which tests are required of international students, of domestic students. And with a lot of the challenges that SAT and ACT have had with test security, particularly for their overseas exams in the last few years, there's been a growing movement to look at policies on the institutional level that are a little bit more user-friendly for students. And certainly I've long been an advocate of being test optional for international students, frankly, because we all know that ACT and SAT, no matter how much they would argue otherwise, their exams are not designed for international students. They're designed for U.S. students in American high schools who learn U.S. English. And that's a real challenge for students who are from abroad, who are mostly, if they've learned English, have probably been educated in British English. And there are obvious differences there in spelling and grammar and in other features of the language. So a lot of complications there. But the first article I'm popping up in the comments section on the Facebook Live page, on the Facebook page for SMIE Consulting, is from the Pi News. And it came out this past week with the title, Higher HEIs in the United States, Widen Test Flexible Policies for International Students. And it covers a couple of newcomers to the test optional bandwagon, Fordham University, that had recently introduced test flexible policies that allow some international applicants to present alternate exams to the SAT and ACT, starting with this current admission cycle, 2018-19. Then it also looks at, talks about the National Center for Fair and Open Testing. And this is fairtest.org, universities, and optional is the link, and I'll post that as well in the comments section. And thank you for joining me, Himanshu. Good to see you and hear from you there. Are you currently in Mumbai or Delhi, or are you still in the UAE? Let me know as we go through this chat today. So good to hear from you. and see you live with us today. The FAIR Test site is one you always have when new institutions in the United States add their name to this list of institutions that are test optional. The important caveat here, and this is something that I think a lot of my international ed friends, particularly on the overseas advising side, kind of fall into this trap that this list is not just for domestic students, but also for international students, and that's not the case. The Pi News article does make clear that Fordham's is limited to some international applicants. It also talks about NYU, and they have actually made become test flexible options for all undergraduate applicants. So, and that's because they also look at other ones, other exams like IB, AP, A levels, and other things. SMU's policy has been recently extended to graduates outside the United States who do not have to take ACT or SAT. So that's really interesting to see where the growth is coming. But that interestingly, when I make the point about this being fairtest.org, they are making clear on their site, though, that the list of institutions that are listed, there are over 1,000 now that have jumped on board the test optional bandwagon, but that 1,000 is not all, they're not all created equal. Some are test flexible, some are do not put as much weight on ACT or SAT in the admissions process, but they also make clear that for international students, the list is not all-inclusive for internationals as being test optional, which is surprising in the fact that the whole premise behind these exams is that they are, again, designed by U.S. companies for U.S. students in U.S. high schools. When I look at this and see that institutions that make exemptions for domestic applicants to not have to take SAT or ACT, like the University of Chicago did this past summer, but they do not, and they quite clearly state that they do not make that extend that exemption to international students. So, for me, that list of all that 1,000 on the fairtest.org site does specifically make, to their credit, does make a point that international applicants should refer to a separate list, which is actually from an international ACAC presentation done a couple of years ago that I referenced in an earlier podcast. And good to see you on board, Lou. I hope things are well for you in the Boston area. Lou Greenwald, good to see you. And the IACAC, International ACAC list, I've just posted the link to that. It's actually from a presentation done at the IACAC conference in 2016. This was at Rutgers. And this list is only about 275 institutions long. So it's not nearly as comprehensive or as voluminous as the fairtest.org list. So I think it's important to keep the distinction here that the test optional movement in the United States, while there have been some big names that have joined it recently, and the FAIR Test list does now have over 1,000 institutions on it, it's not universally applicable to international students, which is, for me, in my opinion, certainly should be. More institutions should be opening their admissions requirements wider to make it easier for international students to get through one of the many, many significant hoops that they have to jump through to become students in the United States. So in terms of where that leaves us, with regard to test optional, I think that you're going to see more and more institutions jump on board, and internal bureaucracies at institutions can, even though the International Admissions Office might want to move forward with this right away, there are always a lot of hurdles and hoops that have to be jumped through institutionally to make any significant changes to admissions policies, particularly because they're in their course catalogs and must be approved by faculty and university senates and such. So we'll hopefully see more of these happening. And if you have questions about test optional and what that really means, I'm happy to talk through that. But I do want to end on this particular topic with a quote from Katie Korhonen, Director of Global Admissions Evaluation Strategy at Fordham. She made the point that we want to remove as many, or excuse me, this is, she's at NYU. We want to remove as many barriers to the application process as possible, and we find our international applicants are able to showcase their academic ability in ways other than by submitting the SAT or ACT. So kudos to NYU for obviously understanding, I think, the issues that are involved for international students with regards to taking SAT or ACT. And we really hope that that these numbers grow in the coming weeks and months. So that's topic number one. We'll move now to another survey that's come out, and surveys come out on international students fairly regularly. It was probably 4 or 5 times a year where you'll get different groups that will survey international students around the world. Some surveys are larger than others, but this one here was by IDP, just released last week at the AIEC conference in Australia. And this survey, I don't have the actual survey. They limit the distribution of that to partner institutions, so we're not able to share that full survey with you here today. But kind of a summary article is posted on the IDP site that I'm listing for you now on the Facebook page. And it highlights one of the things I'd like to focus on is the survey itself, and I'll be referencing this the contents of this survey a little bit more in depth when we talk about in my monthly article I have coming out for Hot Courses later this month on using data in informing international student enrollment decision-making processes, and how surveys like this, there's some real value in, again, knowing your audience. We've talked about that many times on this live chat in the past. So what the IDP survey points out, and they basically addressed students from a variety of countries around the world, almost 3,000 students, their perceptions of the 5 main English-speaking countries and the channels of information that influence their decision-making process. And again, it's real vital information that any institution would want to know. They don't share all of it, again, as I said, with this public article, but they do find out and identify 2 main clusters of students in their attitudes towards online communications. And I think this is something that I think we often don't do enough of as institutions in our enrollment management strategies, is we don't talk a lot about, all international students online must get their information the same way and must all want to be chatting with us from the start. And that's not always the case. In fact, one of the things that I always see institutions kind of struggling with is who am I doing? Who am I having chats with? When am I doing it in the process? What am I talking about at those different stages in the process? But I think what we find in this IDP report, they break it down into 2 groups, the 2 main groups and their attitudes. They call them cautious clickers and carefree chatters. The cautious clickers, they identify students who engage less with sources of information in both searching and communicating, and prefer to deal with a single point of contact when trying to resolve online queries. And they don't necessarily associate online communication with personal conversation. These are, again, a different group. They place less value on online sources when deciding at which institution to study, maybe relying more on family, local friends, advisors, agents, whoever it might be in their circles. So those are perhaps folks, personality types that tend to be a little bit more cautious, more reserved, less willing to divulge information or share information online, probably not as active on social media, at least with people they don't know. So they might be a little bit more hesitant to engage with institutions. The other group, carefree chatters, tend to be, in the IDP results here, tend to be more comfortable in browsing and accessing multiple sources to gather their information. They rely on physical and online means of communication, and they consider those interchangeable, and will utilize all available channels depending on their choices. They do place greater value, for this group, on online sources when deciding at which institution to study. So the key point, I think, is they don't quantify what percentage of the students that they surveyed fell into which of those two groups. But they did say that one thing is clear from the research is that all students in the post-millennial generation are all digital natives, whether it's Generation Z or however post-millennial, whatever you want to call them, they are all digital natives. So they expect trusted advice. They make decisions based on trusted advice in whichever way, and how they define trusted will depend on which of those two groups that they fall into. But what the access to the to online information and chats and all of these other things is important, but they also rely on their personal networks that are less in the influence of U.S. institutions' ability to affect change. So I think it's important to note the results of this survey, though. If you're not an IDP client, you're not going to get all of it. But they do. One of the things I will be referring to in my article for Hot Courses later this month is something that they focused on when they evaluated students in these five major English language countries. They identified Canada, Australia, UK, US, and New Zealand as kind of the top five English-speaking destinations. And they spent time asking them a range of their opinions on who is best in or how they rate the different country destinations in five main categories: quality, affordability, visas, employment considerations, and safety. So the interesting results, and I'll share those in my Hot Courses article later this month, is that the U.S.'s perception amongst these students is that outside of quality, the U.S. does not do well on these in those five categories. And that's one thing whenever I talk to university representatives about their international enrollment plans, I always say, hey, you need to be thinking of yourself not just in relation to your competitors in the United States that you typically will cross application with on the international students. You need to be focusing on how you are perceived as a country. So you first have to sell the United States now. 10, 15 years ago, perhaps that wasn't the case. Certainly when I started in the business, it was less a matter, in 1993, it was less a matter of saying, here's why you need to come to the United States. It's explaining the United States and the system of education we have, but it wasn't presenting the United States as, here's why you need to come here first. That was almost an assumption. It's not so anymore. The United States, because of an increasingly competitive global market, for one, and political events certainly have not helped to make this any easier for universities to recruit. But certainly the tendencies and the results of this IDP survey certainly back up what we've known intuitively for a number of years, that the internationally mobile student pie is getting more, the more and more people wanting a piece of it, and that has meant the share of that pie has shrunk for a number of the major players, including the United States. That's dropped significantly over the past 15 years. But you also see that the pie itself is getting a lot bigger, and that's something that we'll talk more about in the next month or so as we get closer to SEVIS by the numbers, Open Doors, and Project Atlas numbers that'll be released in November. We'll get more into that, how that's changing. But I think what's important to keep in mind related to student behavior information is it's a constantly moving target, and you as an institution you need to be up to date on what's happening out in the wide world and how changing governments, changing policy decisions, changing economies impact your target markets. And that's something that I think not a lot of institutions really invest a lot of time and energy in, spending that and determining how things that happen outside the United States, as well as what happens in the United States, can impact what they do and how that needs to change the way they market and then the way that they message out to prospective students and their parents and other audiences. So great data from IDP. I wish they'd be sharing more of it, but certainly that's data that can be very helpful as institutions make decisions on where to spend their time, money, and effort in terms of recruitment and target markets. So the last piece I'll share today is a bit of a obituary for a social media network, when it launched about 6 or 7 years ago now, was widely considered, okay, this, Google's getting into the social media game in terms of trying to develop a network that's going to be competitive with Facebook and to take over market share from Facebook. Just posted the link to a CNN article that highlighted the apparent demise of Google Plus. The way it all came about is kind of much like the network itself. The Google Plus social media network itself had really failed to generate any enthusiasm to the point that made it a worthwhile investment, frankly, for Google to continue. And the company, in their blog post, admitted, and according to the CNN article, quote here. Google Plus had failed to achieve broad consumer or developer adoption, quote unquote, since it launched as a would-be Facebook rival in 2011. So it's it was a kind of an afterthought kind of article that popped up, and it actually in the article they reveal well back about the same time the Cambridge Analytica scandal was rocking Facebook's world. There was also a similar there was a bug in March of 2018 that opened doors to user data for Google Plus users. It's not widely reported at the time, and Google says they covered it up or they fixed the bug, patched the bug immediately. But as it relates to international education, social media, this platform, for my money, was never anything more than a search engine optimization tool. Because of Google's use was one of the main things if you searched on Facebook or searched on Google for or any search engine for results related to your institution, to you as a person, if you've ever Googled yourself, and I never do that, wink wink. So that's just something that I think people know that when you do searches, if you've been active on certain platforms. And your name is fairly unique. When you search for your name, you may find Facebook people who have Facebook profiles with your name, LinkedIn profiles, Twitter profiles, YouTube channels, other social media platforms, Wikipedia pages, whatever it might be. And Google's attempt with this platform, one of their main stated purposes, though it wasn't a kind of front and center one, was to enhance search optimization for businesses, for people, for companies that were using Google Plus. So my recommendation at the time, when that platform launched, is have a profile or a company page on Google Plus, and whatever you post to Facebook, post it to Google Plus as well. Just because everything you can do in addition to any other SEO practices your company or institution had, this would be another way to enhance that by having a consistent flow of information about your institution, about your company, onto Google Plus. Now, with that was the only thing. I certainly never had any conversations with anybody on Google Plus, although it had an active profile for a number of years there. Never had anything related to international education of any consequence. So certainly wasn't for international educators, probably wasn't the best tool anyway, but I won't give it too much more airtime today other than to say I'm glad to see it go. Frankly, it was never a useful tool for me. But Google Plus, in fact, they don't even have anything in here in the story about how many users were actually on it. Many people had Google Plus accounts but didn't really even know that, because Google, and if you had a Google account, Google also created a Google Plus listing for you, whether you wanted to or not. So that's the way many of these companies work. And Sulav, good to see you from Nepal joining in. Thanks for coming on board. Hope you are well. Hope you and the family are well, and that things are good in Kathmandu. Very, very, very important piece of social media history has been consigned to the, not important piece, but a piece of social media history has been resigned to or defined over to the trash heap of failed social networks. And Google has a growing list there of Orkuts and a couple others that they had developed over the years that have now also gone the way of the Dodo and MySpace. So thanks to Google for making the effort, but we know who's still king of the hill when it comes to social networks. Lastly, I'll just leave you with a few pieces of information. For those of you who have been following midweek roundups on social media and international education consulting's Facebook page, I do now have a YouTube channel that focuses right now primarily on the archives of these particular video chats. So you're welcome to check up on those there. I've just posted the link to that YouTube playlist in the comments section. We've also launched this past month, we've launched a weekly newsletter that we're putting out. So if you haven't already subscribed, you can catch this week's edition of Social Media and International Education's e-newsletter. We're calling it All the SMIE News Fit to Share. And the link I've just shared in the comments section takes you to this week's edition, and you can subscribe to that on that page that you'll see a listing to. So I encourage you to sign up for that newsletter if you haven't, so it'll get delivered to your inbox every Monday. And one final thing I'll share, we've also rebranded and relaunched our website in the past month, and that link is smaconsulting.org, and I encourage you all to check that out. A lot of great free resources there, as well as some of the more comprehensive services that we offer, either in-person or virtual services we offer to institutions and organizations that are looking to get better connected either with international students abroad or with U.S. higher education institutions. So working with a few different folks now and looking to expand the range of companies and institutions that we work with here at SMIE Consulting to help improve what they do and get better connected. And we encourage all of you to check out the archives of these sessions, and obviously tune in next week when we'll bring you another hopefully lively discussion on the topics of the past 7 days. So thanks very much for joining me, and I wish you all the best of luck and have a pleasant week. Bye-bye.